Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you, everybody. Nice to have you back with us here on Close Up Talk Radio. If you're here a week ago, you heard an amazing discussion on the subject of how this country is becoming overdosed on opioids. It's an addiction that is at an all-time high. It's tragically killing millions of people around the world, and it's a very, very serious subject. And we had a great discussion with a retired pharmacologist who has written a book on the subject called We're Overdosed. His name is Barry Gold, and we're happy to have Barry back with us this week to explore this subject in more detail. Barry had a lot to say about it last week. He knows a lot about it. He's a retired pharmacologist. He attended the University of Cincinnati, where he graduated with a Bachelor of Science degree in zoology, and he was awarded a PhD in pharmacology at the Boston University, and took a fellowship, a postdoctoral fellowship later on at Yale at their medical school. But it's something he knows a lot about. And so much so, he was inspired to write the book I mentioned called We're Overdosed. I'm going to bring Barry back on so we can continue this discussion. We had a great discussion, but there was one thing that Barry did not talk about last week that we're going to try and focus on this time, and that is what you do to treat people who are overdosed with opioids. It's the treatment that we're going to focus on heavily. Barry Gold, welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. Nice to have you with us today. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, and I say hello to everyone.
Barry, I love it. You have a great website, and your web address is just too much. It's barrygoldwriter.com, because you are a writer. You're a teacher, you're a lot, but you're a writer, and you've written this book. You had a great discussion last week. It was fascinating, and we'll get a little bit into some of the things you talked about last week, about the fact that we are so overdosed, but let me ask you a little bit about what prompted you to write the book itself. I mean, you know enough about it to realize things are really serious. So you actually just sat down and said, I'm going to write a book on this. You would think there are a lot of books on it. But apparently not. Am I right?
Well, there are a lot of books on it, but remember, they're written by writers and they're written by reporters. And I'm a scientist by training, so I'm writing from the perspective of a scientist trying to explain a very, very technical project or problem to college-educated people who are not scientists. And I use that, I lean heavily on the use of analogy in my writing to explain technical subjects.
Right.
So the question to me is, why did I write this book? What inspired me? And I go back to my first chapter in the book. It talks about the time I taught a course at Jersey City University in New Jersey to recovering addicts. And these addicts, recovering addicts, were studying for certification as drug counselors. New Jersey offers a certificate in that.
Right.
And I broke for lunch, and I noticed all my class came down and joined me at my table in the cafeteria. And one of the students leaned over at me and very seriously looked into my eyes and said, "Why do you teach this course?" I said, "Well, I teach it because it's payback for me. You know, the government paid for some of my education. Therefore, I pay back by trying to teach the public." And she said, "You're not an addict?" I said, "No, I don't go near that stuff. I stay with the drugs that my doctors give me." And I said, "Why do you ask?" And she said, "Because no one is interested in us other than other addicts." And that stayed with me for 20 years. It was so dramatic that people are writing off addicts saying, "I don't want to have anything to do with them, and addicts are sick people, and they deserve to be locked up." Now, my position is addiction is a medical condition, not a legal condition. and addicts or patients.
Exactly.
And I decided to write from that perspective. And I opened the book thinking about the history of morphine, how fascinating. But I realized that's not a subject that's a real grabber. So I expanded it and ended up writing a book on modern drugs, how they came to be, how addicts started using or why they started using, and what can we do about it. And I came up with some ideas that are somewhat out of the ordinary. I hope that answers your question.
You do it very well. Let me ask you a question that some people may be wondering. Is there a big difference between people who are addicted to alcohol versus those addicted to drugs, or is it very similar?
Well, it's similar because they're both addictive. And,
right.
I'll go on record as saying that I was an alcoholic when I was much younger, and I spent years going to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I never went
okay.
near drugs.
Interesting. So let's talk. We're going to talk about treatment here, and I noticed in the references about you, we talk about morphine being commonly used, even in the beginning, for pain release. But then you refer to fentanyl and tramadol. Tramadol obviously is a drug for pain. Where does fentanyl play? You know, we hear so much about how fentanyl is being laced into drugs that are being, you know, snuck across the border into the U.S. and people are dying from it, and a very small bit of fentanyl can actually kill you. What is the role of fentanyl? I'll be honest with you, I don't know a whole lot about fentanyl.
Well, fentanyl is a completely synthetic chemical. Morphine is a natural product taken from the opium poppy. And fentanyl is a synthetic drug synthesized many, many years ago. Now, the sad part about fentanyl is if we look at statistics, in the year 2022, 106,000 people in America died from opiate overdose. And 70% of them died from fentanyl overdose. And that's the scary part of it. Fentanyl is so potent, it is 10 times more potent than morphine. Morphine's clinical dose is 10 milligrams. Fentanyl's clinical dose is 1 milligram. There are 27 milligrams in an ounce, so 1 milligram is not much material.
Is it legally used? I mean, do doctors prescribe fentanyl in certain situations for pain?
I have received fentanyl for surgery.
Interesting.
And I slept through the surgery and didn't feel a thing. So, and I woke up without any hallucinations. But fentanyl is a legal drug. Now, the fentanyl coming into America illegally comes in from Mexico by and large. However, it's not originating in Mexico. The Drug Enforcement Administration teaches us that the pieces of fentanyl, the chemical precursors of fentanyl, come from China. And they are shipped from China into Mexico, where they are made into fentanyl. And then the fentanyl is smuggled into the United States. And it is not smuggled in on the backs of illegal immigrants. It's hidden in cars, and it's loaded on semi-trailers. Now, when I say a semi-trailer, that's hauling corn, for example, 50 tons of corn.
Right.
And fentanyl is coming in a shoebox, in a 80 tons of corn.
Yeah,
and that's why I admonish the public to say, let's invent a sniffer that can sniff out fentanyl on a truckload of corn. That's my position.
Obviously, they can't right now. The dogs, can they smell fentanyl?
They're overpowered by the smell of whatever else the truck is hauling.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so far, we can't we cannot detect the fentanyl smuggled in on trailers or in the hollow compartments of cars.
Well, it's a terrible situation. Obviously, we know that. But let's talk a little bit about the treatment of opioid addiction. You know a lot about this. Let's talk about what the best way is to go about treating people who are addicted to opioids.
Well, there's one question that we have to ask immediately. Is it an emergency situation and the patient is not breathing? Or is it a voluntary situation in which the patient says, I've had it, I need to recover? And if the patient is not breathing, it behooves us to give the patient a drug known as Narcan, which is a trade name for naloxone. And Narcan is administered by nasal spray, and it is now over-the-counter. Our FDA has just declared that it's available over-the-counter. And I advocate that every first aid kit in the United States should have a dose of Narcan included in it for any patient who's not breathing. Now,
What does it do?
It occupies the receptors that our brain has that bind morphine, or those receptors evolved because we have internal peptides that also bind to those receptors.
Right.
And therefore, it mimics a natural nerve agent. So how do we treat patients who say, I've had it, I want to get clean, but I don't know how, because if I stop, I have the urge to use it again? We say to those patients, go to a rehabilitative facility, go to rehab. And in rehab, they will be given a drug known as Suboxone. It's a combination of naloxone and buprenorphine. And that drug will keep them, will clean them up, number one. They will not suffer withdrawal, and they will lose the desire to take the drug. And that keeps them clean. However, left on their own, once discharged from rehab, they will go back, by and large. They will relapse. How do we prevent relapse? It all depends on aftercare. And that's the key to treating addiction, is aftercare. Once the patient gets clean, either through naloxone in rehab or Suboxone in rehab, the patient has to continue with what's called aftercare. Could be Narcotics Anonymous, or it could be any other agent, or it could be any group of people who get together and say, I was an addict and now I want to stay clean.
So it's very similar to the treatment of alcohol addiction in that regard then, correct?
Very much, very much.
Yeah.
It's very much the same treatment. It's a disease that responds to social contact. And that
do you think
is
it's,
one of the – I'm sorry, go on.
I was going to ask, do you think it's harder to get off the desire for drugs than it is to get off the desire for alcohol?
I would imagine that it's – that recovering from any addiction is equally difficult, because the addiction is the strong driving force in the patient's life. The scary part of addiction, that it does take over our lives.
Well, but it seems to me the really big difference, and I guess, you know, I could be challenged on this, but the addiction to drugs can kill you easier, I think, maybe than the addiction to alcohol. Would that be right?
Oh, I think that's fair. Drugs stop breathing.
Yes.
Alcohol
right.
does not stop breathing except at very, very high dose.
Right.
And there's
nothing
that can reverse the presence of alcohol.
That's true, too. Let's talk a little bit about what is in your book and what you have to say about this addiction, about being, you know, we're overdosed. What does the book cover?
Well, I asked the...
Are you there, Barry? Uh-oh. I think we just lost Barry. We did lose Barry. Hold on, folks. I'm going to try and get him back. Occasionally that happens. He's obviously on a cell phone. So let's see if he's going to answer his phone again. His phone is dialing, I believe. All right, Barry, are you back with us? Let me bring on your microphone.
Your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up.
That's not Barry. That's his answering machine. Folks, I'm sorry about this. When this happens, there's not much we can do except dial back and say, we need you, Barry. Hold on. Telephone operator here. Let's see if we can get Barry back on this line. Because he's amazing. He's an amazing guy, and we were just about to talk about the book, which is really important because we want to learn more about what he has to say about it and who the book really is written for. So I'm going to try one more time. Let's see if this is
Barry. Tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up.
No, we have lost him. Folks, I think we may have to continue this show later on because I cannot get Barry back on the line. I'm getting his answering machine, and that's not working. We'll give it one more shot here and see what happens. The number is dialing. All right, Barry, if you're there, hold on. We'll bring the mic back on. That's the only way I can tell who it is. Barry, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, we
what
lost
happened?
You. I'm sorry. Something happened. You dropped off. And occasionally that happens. Are you on a cell phone or on a landline?
I'm on a cell phone.
Yeah, occasionally that happens. Well, you know, let's go back a little bit. I just asked you who you wrote the book for specifically. What do you cover in this book? They're two different questions, obviously. But let's talk about it.
My audience, I believe I write for, are college-educated non-scientists. Now, why do I say college-educated? Because I have so much education, I don't know any better. But that's the audience I find myself writing for, college-educated non-scientists.
Let me ask you another question then. Can an ordinary individual who is having a problem with addiction pick up this book and learn from it? He doesn't have to be college graduate to read a book, you know.
No, you don't. You don't. You asked me my audience that I write for, but I believe my book can be read by anyone and understood because I don't use technical terms. And if I do use a technical term, I define it through analogy.
Well, that's good. So primarily you wrote this for college educate, as you point out, but is it written for people who want to teach on this subject, or is it written from the perspective of it's trying to help somebody overcome their addiction to opioids? How would you answer that?
I didn't target recovering addicts in my writing, although I do quote them because I did teach them. I wrote the book in an effort to share my knowledge, people who don't have a lot of experience with drugs or who are looking at reading the paper saying, how can I help? And that's my target audience. I don't target recovering addicts necessarily.
But these are people who could then go on to help recovering addicts. Wouldn't that be right?
I believe many of the people I address perhaps have a family member who's recovering, and they're scratching their heads saying, how can I help?
What do you think can be done about the addiction to drugs and opioids? I mean, you know the subject very well. It's not getting any better. What's going to have to happen to get this, you know, under control, if it's possible?
Well, I think we have to break it down and say, what part of it can we control through our effort? And for example, I think we could cut back on the fentanyl coming into the country illicitly through technology. If I can open my garage door and start my car with my cell phone, we ought to be able to invent something that sniffs out fentanyl. And that's my position. I think there's a technology that can be invented to help us in our efforts to inspect trucks better coming across the border. But that's fentanyl. How do we tell people don't take drugs? Well, one of the factors that's implicated in drug use, increasing drug use, has to do with this lack of socialization that we find ourselves in as a society in the 21st century. And that is, we attend religious services less than we used to. We join clubs less than we used to. We live in isolation or somewhat isolation in the suburbs. And I don't condemn that lifestyle. I live in the suburb with my son. The socialization that makes people feel loneliness. And I believe it's that loneliness that we feel as Americans that drives us to say, I feel lousy. How can I get rid of this lousy feeling? And they turn to drugs. Now, there's another driver of drug use in the country, and that's people who are prescribed opiates for pain by physicians. And a lot of patients find when they are prescribed an opiate, and I've been prescribed opiates after a surgical procedure, and I don't take them. I put it away and say, you know what, I'll put up with the pain. But there are people, cancer patients, for example, who can't put up with the pain. It's debilitating and it doesn't allow them to function. So they take opiates. Well, we've discovered that we have a problem in the country with people playing the prescriptive game, going to Walgreens and filling the prescription. And then if Walgreens says, you had it 3 weeks ago, we won't fill it, they go up the street to CVS and CVS fills it. I call that playing the prescriptive game.
Yeah.
I think we have to get control of our prescription process. Honest to God, this is ridiculous. Are you still there?
Yeah, no, I'm here. We're listening to you. You're doing good.
I
wanted to ask you another question, too. We're talking about fentanyl coming in. What drugs are coming across the border so much that they need to be laced with fentanyl? Why is that?
Well, fentanyl is so potent that it can be hidden. I mentioned the clinical dose of fentanyl in a human is 1 milligram. But there are fentanyl derivatives that are horse tranquilizers. Well, if it's going to tranquilize a horse, what do you suppose it will do to a human? It'll kill a human. Fentanyl is included in a lot of drugs, including speed, methamphetamine, and including cocaine, and including all opiates, because it extends the dose that the peddler can sell. And it's so potent that as much as a few crystals of fentanyl included in a morphine dose means a little bit of that morphine dose can be held back, or the heroin dose can be held back, and the drug dealer can make more money by cutting his drugs with fentanyl, because fentanyl is inexpensive and very ultra potent stuff.
Well, you've just explained it, and you wonder why people do that. I mean, they know if they put too much in here, it could kill people, but I guess they just don't care. They're after the money, is what it comes down to, obviously.
Well, yeah, drug dealing is a business that lacks morality. And what do we do about businesses that lack morality? There's very little we can do. We can't impose morality on people.
Let me also ask you again about Narcan. You said that's now been approved. It's you can buy it across the counter. Is there any problem with taking Narcan by itself? Is that can you get addicted to Narcan?
No, none whatsoever. Narcan has no pharmacologic activity other than blocking opiate receptors in our brain. Well, those opiate receptors in an addicted individual are occupied by the drug of choice. Narcan knocks the drug off those receptors and the patient eliminates them. But the other point about Narcan in an addicted individual, it will not precipitate withdrawal symptoms. So it is a very, very safe drug, and that's why I advocate putting it in every first aid kit in the country. I'm going to assemble a first aid kit for my car, and I will have Narcan in there.
Are there any new treatments that are on the horizon for the treatment of drug addiction that you're aware of?
Well, they're experimenting with psychedelic agents like psilocybin and some other agents, and they're finding that the dissociative qualities of drugs, of psychedelic agents, somehow change the addict's point of view that the addict no longer wants to take his drug of choice. But what's missing is clinical data that suggests that. What we have are experiential data. Patients have done it. They've taken psilocybin and said, I feel better. I don't have to take heroin afterwards. But there's no clinical data to support it yet. And my feeling is in the absence of real clinical data administered by licensed physicians, there's no data.
Obviously,
But in general, I'm sorry, go on.
I was going to say, you're still studying this subject pretty much in depth. You're keeping very informed on it. Are you finished writing about the subject, or do you think you'll write more?
Well, I hope to write about other drugs of abuse. I have a proposal into my agent about another drug of abuse that I was hoping to write a book about. I won't go into detail because I'm a writer and I protect my subject.
Your ideas. Yeah, no, I understand that.
Yeah, and right now I'm working hard on a memoir entitled Boomer Dad because I'm a baby boomer. But that's another subject.
That's a great title. Well, listen, it's been great to talk to you. You know, this is such a fascinating subject to get involved in. And your book, again, I would assume your book is available in places like Barnes & Noble or in Amazon. Am I right?
Both, and it's available as a hardcover, softcover, and an ebook.
Well, anybody who's really interested in this subject, especially if you want to learn more about the subject, you should get a copy of Barry's book. It's called We're Overdosed, and it's by our guest, Barry Gold. And by the way, Barry has a great website. It's Barry Gold Writer. BarryGoldWriter.com. Barry, it's been great chatting with you. Thank you for taking the time to be with us today, okay? Sorry about the fact that we lost you for a minute or two.
And I bid everyone a good afternoon.
Very good. Same from me. Thank you.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.